Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We have a lot of news going on today on this Wednesday morning. Antonio Brown wants out of Pittsburgh. Kyler Murray is getting buzz as the first round pick in the draft coming up. But we are going to start in the NBA. LeBron and the Lakers trying to sneak in a win before tomorrow's All-Star break. Doable since they were playing the lowly Hawks. Fourth, Lakers down 8. LeBron and one, he had 28 points on the night. All right, under 4 minutes to play now. Lakers within 4. This doesn't help. Atlanta's Torian Prince for 3. Hawks go up 7 next position. Possession, Trae Young getting by LeBron, finishes the layup and one. And the Hawks win, beating the Lakers 117 to 113. The Lakers now go into the All-Star break under 500. LeBron, that guy right there, triple-double, but it wasn't enough. Here he is on last night's loss.
We didn't have consistent play from all facets of the game, offensively and defensively. We jacked up a lot of our coverages to start the game. Then in the third quarter, we jacked up a lot of our coverages again. So it was always playing uphill like we've been doing as of late. So we're going to be a lot better.
How close are you to the point where you start worrying about the playoffs? Is that getting close?
Until you either make it or don't make it, that's when you worry about it.
He got the "Are you concerned yet?" question, which is what I gave you all year last year when he played for Cleveland. What happened last night, Nick? What went so wrong for the Lakers?
Well, in the first quarter, the Hawks hit 10 threes. The NBA record for a quarter is 11. But after the first quarter, I actually thought Lakers were going to be fine. A team hits 10 threes and you come out of that quarter down just 6, you know they're going to cool off. You know that's not going to continue, and it didn't continue. They only hit, I think, 6 the rest of the game. But what happened last night for the Lakers was the first quarter hurt them. Late in the game, when the Hawks could not score,
yes,
the Lakers couldn't score. The Hawks were stuck on 110 points from 6.5 minutes left to inside of 2 minutes left.
Yeah. And they started the fourth quarter with 100 points.
Right. And they scored 10. And I mean, the fourth quarter, the Hawks couldn't score at all. I think they scored 17 for the quarter overall.
Mm-hmm.
And they went on a 5-minute drought without any points. And the Lakers barely chipped into the lead. At the end of the game, LeBron was clearly gassed, probably because he played 44 minutes like it was an elimination playoff game, not a game against Atlanta. They had a playoff-style rotation where they played essentially 7 guys, which was inexplicable to me. There were so many things in this game that were indefensible and inexplicable. The way the Lakers started, the way they couldn't finish, the rotations throughout. The Hawks had their big men were instantly in foul trouble. And Luke Walton's response to that was, let's just not play a center all night. Let's just have LeBron. Let's try the point center lineup for one of the first times all year. This was almost a must-win game for the Lakers. The rotations and LeBron usage would tell you they knew it was a must-win game, and yet the players and the coach couldn't respond, and this is an indefensible, inexplicable loss for them, Steve.
And it's going to sit with them for a long time. You don't want to lose to a team like the Hawks. The Hawks, worse than the NBA, giving up 118 points a game. You're going in there. You need the win. After the big blowout this weekend against the 76ers, get a nice break, recharge your battery, which we all thought, make this last push, 25, 28-game push, get into the playoffs, and see what we can do. But this loss right here, like, we're going to get to 6 weeks from now, will we look back and be like, man, that was the night that they didn't make the playoffs? Right. Because it's on the board. Like, we were thinking, oh, man, they're going to definitely make the playoffs. They need to get to the 7 line so they can avoid Golden State. Oh, I just believe with what I saw last night, because the reason why they had the rotation, I'm not trying to justify that, but they were trying to win. There are games where you have teams that are one team is superior than the other, and they don't care. They're trying to preserve themselves. They got guys sitting out, or the NBA, sometimes guys will just mail it in. No, the Lakers were trying to win this game. So for me, you could be like, in watching the game, it wasn't like the Hawks were just unconscious the first quarter. The Lakers were lazy on defense, and they were getting some wide open looks. You can't give a team like the Hawks 10 three-pointers in the first quarter.
It's insane.
And then they tightened up in the second quarter defensively, but in the third quarter went right back to sleep. So the inconsistency that we've seen from a defensive standpoint, and that's been there with the Lakers since the third week in January, it continued last night.
Earlier this week, we talked about this 26-game push, and you mapped out what has to happen. And it was almost like, and Atlanta, well, they have to beat Atlanta. They have to beat Atlanta. So they don't. When you look at this team now, is this rock bottom for the Lakers?
Yes. And C's point on this is going to sit with them for a while. They don't play again until, obviously, after the All-Star break. They got 10 days to think about this. 10 days to think about if they're going to have a new coach after the All-Star break. 10 days to think about what is this team's identity right now. So much of last night was just inexplicable because – so it's one thing if you're going to play it like a playoff game where you think LeBron's going to play 43, 44 minutes. At least be smart about when he gets his rest. There's a way to steal extra rest. If you're going to have a guy miss 2 minutes of game time, have it be the final minute of a quarter, then the first minute of the next quarter, so he is literally sitting on the bench during the quarter break. Luke Walton didn't do that. He played the entire first quarter. It was sat out the beginning of the second, and then the other two times he went out of the game were mid-quarter and then went back in later in that quarter. That's not real rest. That's not real time sitting on the bench. Sometimes you can be out of a game for 7 minutes of real time and only miss 2 minutes of actual time. This is you look at it, Jenna. I said they had 10 losses to play with. Now they got 9 losses to play with. This wasn't supposed to be one of those losses.
Yeah, the style of play, too, I had a hard time at the end trying to identify what they were trying to do. Because the first three quarters, the Lakers been what they've done through the season, trying to get up and down the court. LeBron basically being the number one ball handler. But I had a big problem. LeBron got gassed. He's not in the type of shape that we're used to seeing him in. And to me, he did the Hawks a favor. Selling for jump shots last night. And only shooting 20 shots, LeBron can't shoot 10
threes.
He's got to go to the bucket and get to the free throw line to be able to stabilize a team like that. And to me, the Lakers, one of the worst free throw shooting teams I've ever seen, and LeBron is still not. Now, last night he wasn't bad, but his lack of confidence at the line had me wondering, why are you setting for all those jump shots last night when you should have been taking the ball to the rack and going to the line? He should have been at the free throw line 12, 13, 14 times last night. That's how they could have gotten the win. But he decided to stay outside the three-point arc and jack up three-pointers. I didn't like that
especially
in a game that he was playing like they had to win, too.
Especially when late in the game the Hawks can't score and you have a chance to actually make it. Not they made it a game, but you have a chance to take back control of the game. And it wasn't a night where LeBron, I think, was afraid to get fouled. He was 9-11 from the line. He was actually hitting. It was one of his best free throw shooting nights of the year. The reason I think he was shooting jump shots late is it's exhausting to go to the rim. I think he was totally gassed.
But when you're gassed, your jump shot's going to go first.
Agreed. I'm not saying it was the right strategy, but what we see guys, when they're tired, settle instead of doing what's difficult, which is why you don't play someone. Hey,
44 minutes.
Other than James Harden, I would guess there isn't a top 10 player in this league that maybe Giannis that has played 43-plus minutes in a non-overtime game this year. You don't do that. You save that for the must-win games in the postseason, and even then, you got to do it smarter than they did it last night.
The elephant in the room is going to come down to coaching and whether Luke Walton is the guy, and we're going to talk about that coming up, but I'll ask you the same question that LeBron was asked after the game. Do you think this team right now can actually make the playoffs?
I think they can make the playoffs. I think they all but waved goodbye to the 7 seed last night. Later in the evening, the Spurs got a one-point victory over Memphis. Memphis missed a free throw late. The Spurs are the team they're chasing. So they could have, if that game goes a little different and the Lakers take care of business, you could wake up this morning, Lakers are two back of the seven seed, and said they're four back of the seven seed. Do I think they can catch the Kings and the Clippers? I do, because the Kings have, I think, three straight losses coming up at Denver, at OKC, at Golden State. And the Clippers, we know they're going to regress once. They don't have Tobias Harris. We know how good he is. But the
but
eight
you don't
seed,
want to see them in that eight seed. They'll have to face the Warriors.
I mean, right. Like, the for who, for what at this point? Like, yeah, you can make the playoffs. You can break that streak. A Lakers season without a playoff berth. But to get to face the Warriors in the first round so LeBron can get washed by the Warriors for the third straight year?
Yeah, I'm not going to overreact to last night's loss. It's a bad loss for the team. I do believe that LeBron is going to play the last 25 games like we haven't seen him play 25-game stretch in a long time. I do believe they have a couple different levels they can go up to. I also believe that Denver can also get the number one seed. I'm not just going to concede that to Golden State, because then if they're in the eighth seed, sometimes things work out like that. But LeBron James exiting the NBA playoffs in the first round in his Laker debut, that would not be a good season for the Lakers. And when you're playing bad basketball, it's just like playing bad football. When New England was playing bad football, you know what, Tom Brady? What were people saying?
Too old.
He looks old. LeBron James against the Hawks. And when you're playing bad basketball, well, LeBron's starting to look old. So I'm looking forward to seeing these last 25 games, because the King is going to have to be able to carry them, not act like a
the
prince.
The fact that he looks old with a triple-double last night, but then on top of that, the loss. It was just a confusing night and a bad loss for the Lakers. Coming up, you mentioned football. See, let's talk some football. Can the Steelers contend without Antonio Brown? They might have to. That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We're back right after this. We'll get to Antonio Brown's trade demands in a minute, but first, LSU, Kentucky. Marlon Taylor catches the alley-oop, throws it down. His head was above the rim.
I mean, he got up, and this was a good game and a very nice win by LSU on the road at Rupp. Questionable call at the end, surprising to
very
see go against Kentucky in that arena late in the
Spurs
game.
Spurs and Grizzlies, Rudy Gay, baseline rock in the rim.
Rudy Gay's having a good season there with San Antonio. You think that he would fit into that system, an all-round player, to good two-way player, can shoot the J, drives to the hole after having that horrific injury a couple years ago. Good for him.
Lakers and Hawks, LeBron threading the needle to Brandon Ingram.
This is what LeBron was doing through three quarters last night. I think he had 14 assists through three quarters. He was playing point center and was distributing the ball very well.
And the Lakers, from the beginning, missed five or six layups. LeBron, right in the restricted area, gives them where they need it. First play of the game.
First play of the game,
oh,
Kuzma.
My goodness.
And Kuzma missed two more layups the rest of the way.
Celtics and Sixers, Jason Tatum spinning off of Joel Embiid and then dunking over Ben Simmons.
All right, so Tatum's got a little bit of extra for Philly. He thought he should have been the number one pick of the draft. Philly traded up from 3-1 to avoid taking him so they could take Markelle Fultz. So he always got a little extra for them. This was a super highlight by him and a great game last night.
Huge win by the Celtics. In Philadelphia.
Philly Boston's their bugaboo, man.
They got their number.
It sure seems like it.
All right, to the NFL now. Despite having 3 years left on his deal with the Steelers, Antonio Brown has reportedly requested a trade. This stemming from the fallout of skipping practice the final week of the season and subsequently being benched for the final game. Quick history, Steelers missed the playoffs. Brown doubled down on his desire to leave yesterday, tweeting, "Thank you, Steeler Nation, for a big 9 years. Time to move on and forward." Cece, how did we get here? How did all of this come to this?
It didn't come to this just over one argument. It's just like anything else, any other relationship that falls apart. Typically, when the breakup happens, you get into the blame game. Well, whose fault was it? It's their fault. It's not my fault. No one wants to look at themselves. But the Pittsburgh Steelers and Antonio should take some blame in this. The Pittsburgh Steelers, because it's their organization, and they've done things a certain way, but they have decided to allow a player who happens to be a wide receiver, and that happens to be AB, over the years, bend the rules, no different than a child. So when the child realizes that the parents aren't going to enforce the rules, or one of the parents is easier than the other one, which Mike Tomlin, everyone says he's a player's coach. In the press conferences, he acts like he's a tough guy, but he's run that locker room in a totally different fashion. And when Mike Tomlin took over the Pittsburgh Steelers, people forget, you know, 34 years old, taking over a veteran team with plenty of patience and knowing that the organization was going to support him. You know, he won the interview process. They were going to hire someone else.
Yep.
But he won the interview process, so they hired him, took a chance on him. They got the right guy. But let's not forget, he was a young guy that took over a veteran team with a great organizational support. So that's part of the reason why he's had success. But how he's dealt with AB and allowing him to get away with a number of things, disciplinary things, being late to meetings, changing the rules where he could sleep somewhere else at training camp. And, yes, for star players, do they do certain things a little different? Yes. But when you start to lose and the younger players start to see this, it starts to eat away. So guys start to take exception and be like, well, why can't I do it? He does it. So that's what's happened in Pittsburgh. So the Pittsburgh Steelers are at fault. And Antonio, he's at fault because through the years, he's gotten worse and worse, even though on the field, he's gotten better.
Listen, on the field, these are two separate things. Because on the field, the production is unquestioned and unprecedented. But off the field, to use both of your analogies and stretch them further, you said like with a child, like with a kid. You extend the bedtime 15 minutes, about 2 weeks later, I want another 15 minutes. Like you immediately get used to the adjustment and ask for more and more and more. And like a relationship, if you don't address the root causes of the arguments, even if you might go a couple months without an argument, even if things are going great, you're winning football games, you're making all pro teams, those root causes are still there. They never addressed Antonio Brown's growing sense of entitlement, and it seemed like they never addressed he and Big Ben's almost, dueling, we need each other but don't necessarily like each other relationship. And so as AB continued off the field, within the Steelers organization and outside of it, to make more and more reckless decisions, this was almost inevitable.
And it's hard, even for Ben, with all his experience and his leadership, being a captain, all those things, Super Bowl champ, all those things, it's hard to be critical of the players when the coaches aren't being critical. And that's one thing, man, I remember when Dennis Green, when we had our biggest problem, it was when I decide to chastise one of my teammates, and Dennis didn't support me. And at that point, I knew my days were numbered in Minnesota. I knew I couldn't stay there but so long. And this is just a prime example of if you're a parent, if you're trying to run an organization, hashtag do what you want to do. Because that's what AB ended up. In his 8 years watching this relationship, they let him do what he wanted to do. Get to practice whenever you want to. Get to the building whenever you want to. And when you do that, this can only be the end result. They're lucky that they got the superior play out of him. And that's the reason why this took so long, because he works so hard. He spends so much money on his body. His performance on the field, Julio Jones, is second to none. Those are the only two people you can talk about over this span that you can say, man, these two guys right here are on the level that no other receivers are on in the NFL.
And the other element to it, and I'm glad you mentioned, C, the production, because Mike Tomlin gave this quote himself, but he was quoted by a player as saying, it might have been Ryan Clark, I'm not sure, as saying, we will put up with it as long as the production's there. And so Antonio Brown knew that.
But that's not right, necessarily right either.
I think it obviously turned out not to be correct.
Of course.
My point is, if you, in any workplace, if you have incredible faith and confidence in your ability to produce, and you don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon, and you have heard either directly or indirectly, they're going to let you act however you want, mm-hmm. as long as you keep producing, then why would I change my behavior as long as I believe I'm going to still produce?
Oh, like, absolutely.
So you're going to let me, when everyone's living in these terrible dorms at training camp, get an Airbnb? You're going to let me mm-hmm. occasionally skip walkthroughs? But
The concession the Vikings made for me was I could bring my own mattress. And then after the Vikings saw that I was getting a special mattress, you know what they did? Well, they ordered them up for the team.
Right. I'm glad you mentioned that. Nearly every team makes at least small concessions for their best players. But very often, and for the best teams, your best players are also your best leaders.
Yeah.
So they knew when you got that mattress, you weren't going to rub it in the face of a teammate. You weren't gonna lord it over people. At least I think you wouldn't. Like they wouldn't. It would surprise me if you did. But you're kind of smiling like maybe you did that
you're right.
to somebody.
No, you're right.
And so AB, it was the opposite. AB flaunted the privileges and then continued to take advantage. And then even despite all this, Jenna, I think they might have. They being the Steelers wanted to reconcile. And AB, every step of the way this offseason, whether it's the Instagram of him in a Photoshop Niners jersey or yesterday. Mm-hmm. Essentially filing for divorce when the other party might still want to go to counseling.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that the Pittsburgh Steelers and a great organization. Now, they've had some characters throughout their history. Now, they have allowed certain players. I know Mean Joe Green tells me a story, and Terry Bradshaw, when they get together, about when they were on the team together and Terry was running the lap, and Terry was like, man, why didn't that guy over there run? It's like, that's Mean Joe Green. Mean Joe Green don't run no laps. But so in sports, we've seen this, but typically not to the detriment of the whole team. So Nick is right. Just like no other building organization, the most talented people, will they do little things and everything? Yes. But it's to enhance that ability, not to one day have that used from a control standpoint, used against them.
And quickly before we break, how big of the drop-off will it be for the Steelers with no Lev Bell and now no, most likely, Antonio Brown?
Listen, I know you've been of the belief that the Steelers have been competitive in every decade since they've been the Pittsburgh Steelers. Not of the belief, that's a fact, that this is the most consistent organization over the history of the NFL. So I'm not going to act like losing Antonio Brown contract the franchise. But you don't get better by losing the best receiver in football. There is no way that the Steelers, even if the culture gets better, and maybe they'll end up having a better record than last year, because last year was a down year. But the Steelers will be worse. I'll tell you this much. The Browns, it's easier for the Browns to play them, for the Ravens to play them, for the Bengals to play them. Mm-hmm. We don't have to deal with 84 and the 120 yards and one touchdown he's going to put on our head every time he plays us. Like, they won't be as good.
All right, we'll talk much more about this and where he might go coming up. But on the other side, how big of a hit will LeBron's legacy take if the Lakers miss the playoffs? That's next on First Things First. In 4 days, the greatest event in motorsports is back. The Daytona 500 kicking off the 2019 NASCAR season Sunday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern with the pre-race beginning at 1 p.m. It is only on Fox. Time now for Say What? James Harden and Russell Westbrook have both been on historic streaks. Yesterday, Michael Jordan was asked which was more impressive. Say what?
Both. They all both hard, you know. And uniquely, it shows the talent, you know, that we have within the league. It shows still the progression within the league. I'm very proud about what both guys have done because they are making their mark. For the league, and I think it really helps the growth of the league. Which is harder from a player standpoint? 6 championships, by all means.
Get in there, MJ.
That wasn't the question. That's your guy, see?
Yeah.
Your guy, Mike, bringing himself up when it had nothing to do with the
question.
No, nice
to promote the league and everything. Nice to promote the league. The league, you know, great, hard, and he's making a mark. Mm-hmm. Russ doing, but you
reminder.
Know. When it's all, I mean, when it's all said and done, he's the GOAT, and his record speaks for itself.
He knows it.
Yeah.
Can I say one thing about the GOAT and Wilt? Because Wilt has to do with both these streaks, right? Mm-hmm. Russ beat Wilt's consecutive triple-double streak.
Yes.
And the only person who has more consecutive 30-point games than Harden's 30 right now is Wilt. And Harden needs to basically double his streak to beat his. It's one of the reasons why in basketball, like, I think Wilt standing amongst all-time greats is hurt by how great his numbers are.
Yes.
If his numbers were 20% worse, they would almost be more believable. If instead of averaging 50 a game, he averaged 45, maybe we'd almost look at him in a great, because he's never brought up in the greatest player of all time discussion. But he's got his own record book. Like, all the records are non-Wilt Chamberlain categories, which is what makes what Russ just did so impressive. So, little shout out to Wilt while Mike's shouting himself out.
Yeah. Nice to hear from Mike, though. We
it's
don't
nice to hear
very
from
often.
Mike, especially on a day where LeBron's losing to the Hawks.
Right.
Great stuff.
Okay.
Time for stories to start your morning.
Not
epic
ideal.
Comeback for number 2 ranked Duke last night. They were down 23 to Louisville with less than 10 minutes to go and ended up winning. See, how big was this for Zion and company?
Big win for Duke. You had thought this was one of those college nights in January, February. We see the top teams. They lose all the time, especially on the road. Louisville is a tough place. Louisville's talented. We know the program is going through some transition right now. But huge win for these kids to be able to stick in there. And the last 10 minutes was exciting.
And to do it despite Zion Williamson having some stops and starts due to foul trouble in this game, Cam Reddish, the third of the three superstar freshmen, was outstanding. They got this win despite R.J. Barrett having one of his worst games of the year. Great win for Duke in Zion, 27-12.
Last night, Celtics taking down the Sixers 112-109, and that was with no Kyrie. Nick, how impressive was the win for Boston?
This is a tremendous win for the Boston Celtics, a necessary win after two stomach punch losses to the L.A. teams, blowing 18 and 28-point leads. If you're Philly, though, you've got to be really concerned with the fact that Boston seems to have your number. Philly had been the second-best team in the league at home this year, second only to Denver. Boston comes in there without their best player, controls this game. They're up six late. It took a Philly flurry to make it as close as it was late, and they get this win.
Jenna, outside the obvious as far as Boston and the number that they have against the 76ers, let's talk about Gordon Hayward. Last night, coming off the bench, playing 28 minutes, he was special, shooting the basketball well from deep. And Brad Stevens put him in a position where he was able to make more plays offensively, so you could start to see some of the same sets that they ran were very, very similar to what he did in Utah. So very promising game for him.
And hit the biggest shot of the night.
Brad Stevens watching our show, taking some Gordon Hayward advice. Moving on to the Lakers, not exactly the best first half of the season for them. There was the LeBron injury, the AD trade that didn't happen, the lack of growth from the young guys, and then last night a loss to one of the worst teams in basketball in the Atlanta Hawks. Lakers are under 500 now and currently sit at the 10th seed in the West. CeCe, how would missing the playoffs impact LeBron James' legacy?
Ooh, I mean, I haven't even thought about that. That's a good question. I mean, when LeBron goes somewhere, we know that the best players typically, because it's NBA, they can play 40 minutes, especially in the playoffs. So you're getting a stretch drive. They can play, they can dominate both ends of the court. So this is more of a telling sign for an NBA player than it is for an NFL player, say a quarterback. So it would affect him, but it wouldn't be one of those type of things he couldn't recover from, because he's not going to get the blame for it. For one, it would be the first time that we saw some sign of him being human with the injury, missing the 18 games. But a lot of this is going to be on Luke Walton. It's his fault. It's the Lakers' fault, lack of developing these young players, lottery picks that they have on the squad, that they weren't better to support them. It's going to be on, Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka, what they did this offseason, Lance, Rondo. Those weren't the right moves. JaVale McGee. So it's not going to be on LeBron until after you blame all those other things, because we saw LeBron last May in the NBA Finals. We saw LeBron the first 20, 25 games of this season. So we know LeBron, it's still in him to play at a high, high level. So all those other people and parts of the organization are going to get blamed before LeBron does.
So I agree with you in the short term. But in the long term, I disagree with you entirely. In the long term, when people are, if they miss the playoffs and you are just looking at LeBron's basketball reference page 10 years from now, nobody's going to remember, they signed Lance and the coach stunk and the young.
The reason why I say right now is because we don't know if he's going to win a championship.
Sure, absolutely.
Let's just say he's going to win. If he ends up winning the championship,
then it doesn't matter. Absolutely.
So all those other things are going to be the points they're going to be talking about until after LeBron's career is over, or if they would happen to make the playoff 2 years in a row or
miss
something
the playoffs,
like that.
Right. Yes. And so I think that history makes us lose perspective to a degree on the details. Now, also, this would be a footnote if they do win a title moving forward. But I will tell you, additionally, I think it's going to be harder for them to recruit a free agent if you don't have the Lakers in the playoffs, if they look that far away. Now, the legacy discussion to me is an interesting one, because I don't believe athletes in any sport should ever be able to, barring some horrible scandal, they'd find out they were taking steroids, they go backwards. And by that I mean, you should never have your legacy tarnished by playing more. Like, wherever you have LeBron in the pantheon, if he retired after last year, he shouldn't be penalized if this... Do you follow what I'm saying?
Like the Brett Favre. Like, do you tarnish Brett Favre for what happened? He sort of petered out at the end and you don't see him as...
I think continuing to play should always, if not enhance, at the very least shouldn't hurt where what your standing is. Like, I don't hold the Wizards years against Jordan. Like, I think that would... If he retired and never came back against the Bulls, he was what he was. You can argue the Wizards years enhanced it a bit because he was 40 years old, averaging 20 points a game. But I don't think it's fair to say a guy was here, and if he had just quit, he would have stayed here. But he kept playing, so now he goes back.
What I think is baked in there is that was he in his prime? Because one of your arguments with LeBron is,
his prime
has been so much longer than, well, okay. Well, he was in his prime and they lost the playoffs. So that would be huge. It would also be a passing of the torch. He can't be the best player in the world and not be playing in the playoffs.
That is correct. That I totally agree with you on. And that's the other reason why this does have a legacy impact, no matter where you have him in the all-time standings, is how long was LeBron holding on to the crown of best player alive? Because each of the last 5 years... At this point, there were people saying it's not him anymore. It was 5 and 4 years ago, Steph Curry was getting it, and then what, in the playoffs, LeBron took it back. Harden or Russ were in the conversation for it, and then in the playoffs, Kevin Durant was in the conversation for it, LeBron took it back. Mm-hmm. This year, Giannis is obviously, right now, playing at a higher level all around than anyone, and Harden's probably going to win the MVP. If LeBron doesn't have the opportunity to make in the playoffs take it back, then it is a passing of the torch of who the best player alive is in the public sphere. And that is part of the legacy. How long were you the best player? How many straight years did you go to the playoffs? How long did you stay in your prime?
One quick question for you that you brought up, which was interesting. Do you think the Lakers not making the playoffs will impact the free agent that the Lakers are able to get?
I think it will impact the Lakers, yes, because guys want to win. But also, I mean, there's plus and minuses everywhere. Will that be a plus or minus for him? A guy like Kawhi, I don't necessarily know that. Kawhi could be like, man, they weren't good before I got here. I came here, then they were great. So there is a positive spin to it depending on that individual player.
I just think how great LeBron can be is the best recruiting tool the Lakers have. And if he doesn't have a few weeks in the postseason to remind people how great he can be, that's a recruiting tool they won't have.
Yeah, and it's an interesting topic. All right, back to the NFL now. It appears the end has come for Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh. He's reportedly requested a trade from the Steelers. This stemming from the fallout of skipping practice the final week of the year and from his rocky relationship with quarterback Ben Roethlisberger. Yada, yada, yada. Steelers missed the playoffs. So Brown tweeted yesterday, "Thank you, Steeler Nation, for a big 9 years. Time to move on and forward." And other players around the league weighed in. Jalen Ramsey tweeting at the Jaguars, shrug emoji, and Cardinals corner Patrick Peterson said, "Yo, Antonio Brown, hit my line." All right, Chris, which teams do you think should trade for Antonio Brown?
Well, I think there's a number of teams that I think that he would fit into their offense. Also, you have to try to figure, you have to be careful with those players. Those players don't understand, you know, salary cap, things like that, because someplace he might fit, but he's looking for a new contract. So you need to have him go to a place that has some space salary cap wise to make it more realistic. But I believe there's a number of spots that we'll be looking into Antonio Brown working for them. I think number one team would be the 49ers. They have to, with Jimmy Garoppolo coming back off a knee injury. Kyle Shanahan can say Julio Jones under me when I was in Atlanta as the OC had the best year of his career. They got space. They got space for a number one guy. He's also got Jerry Rice on his side. Jerry Rice has already said things to that 49ers organization early in this process, saying that AB would like to come there. So I believe the Indianapolis Colts, to me, they're the most dangerous team because they're a good young football team. T.Y. Hilton, we saw him with no help, what they were doing. Andrew Luck, comeback player of the year. They have cap space, and I just believe Frank Wright and the way they designed their overall offense. Look what he did with Eric Ebron coming over as a disappointing first-round pick from the Detroit Lions, what he did in that offense. So I believe there's a number of locations. Tampa Bay, I believe, could be that third team Bruce Arians, he does have a history with AB being there in Pittsburgh. DeSean Jackson's not happy. They can get off of his contract to be able to add that deep threat. So I believe there's some good spots for him where he can duplicate the types of numbers that we saw what he did with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
But, Nick, is there an element to be careful what you wish for because you could end up with an organization like Buffalo or Jacksonville where you're not with a Ben Roethlisberger and you're not going to get thrown these balls that you've been thrown the last couple of years?
Listen, of course he could end up in a situation worse than Pittsburgh. He clearly is fine with taking that risk, and whatever team trades for him recognizes the best Antonio Brown would be a happy Antonio Brown. The best Antonio Brown is not Antonio Brown that's going to have some discontent like he did at the end of his time in Pittsburgh. But to answer your question, which team would be better with Antonio Brown? All of them. He's the most productive receiver in the league. The last 6 years, you can stack them up against any receiver's best 6 years of their career, and he's got more yards than them. And here's just active guys. Active guys, the only receiver who's close in yards is Julio, and he doubles Julio up in touchdowns. AJ Green's an excellent player. He's got 2,500 more yards than him, 20 more touchdowns. We could put Jerry Rice up there. Jerry's best 6 years. AB's got more yards. We could do it. Jerry has him killed in touchdowns over his best 6 year stretch. But I looked at it last night. Randy's best 6 years. With respect, your best 6 years. Nobody's put up the number of yards, and he's neck and neck with everyone in touchdowns except for Jerry Rice. He's that dominant of a player. Now, the teams you mentioned, San Francisco, this is an important year for Jimmy Garoppolo. Mm-hmm. It's an important year for Shanahan, important year for Lynch. They have Kittle, and that's it as far as skill position guys that scare you. Indy's also interesting. Indy's sitting there at 34, and you could theoretically have turned the third pick of the draft, because they traded out of it, into Quentin Nelson, an All-Pro, Darius Leonard, an All-Pro, and then Antonio Brown, if the Steelers were to take that trade. But if I'm Pittsburgh, Jenna, I am trying to create my own market. And by that, I mean, I think they should get a first-round pick for him. If Indy's willing to give the 34th, I call Green Bay and say, we can trade him to Indy for 34. Will you give us 30? And if Green Bay says yes, I call Oakland. And I say, we got the 30th waiting for us. Will you give us the 27th? I call Indy again. I'm like, hey, the 34th is gone, but you got the 26th. You can call Cleveland. You got the 17th. He's so good. Chris, I think he is one of the few skill position guys in the league that can take an average offense and elevate it a full gradation in the league. I don't think he is.
Now, that part right there, I don't necessarily agree with. Without knowing what the system is, who out the quarterback, who's going to be the quarterback, I don't, because I know wide receivers can be eliminated. But what he has taken for granted was all those other weapons. That's not included in those 6 years. What about L. Bell running the ball? Sure. What about a great offensive line? What about a Hall of Fame quarterback? Most of the times in these situations, Jenna, I don't see it getting better. Because I know the Pittsburgh Steelers organization. I know the people that run the team. I feel like I know Mike Tomlin. I feel like I know Ben Roethlisberger. I covered him his whole career. It doesn't get better than the situation that he's been in. And we as wide receivers, man, we have a tendency to wear out our welcome. This is only, he's put up historic numbers, but he's going out of Pittsburgh in a historic way too, the way I've seen other receivers do it. And for him to think that yesterday he woke up and said, I'm going to request a trade and my life got better, to me, I'm doing that with some apprehension, because I know what the Pittsburgh Steelers do. Look at the last 8 years. They did not let all these stories get out about him.
Sure.
Is he going to have that protection somewhere else? So, be careful what you wish for. I don't believe he will be playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but there's a lot of bad landing spots in the NFL and make you disappear in a hurry. Well, you're not in the top 10 as far as merchandising, because you're not with Steelers Nation. You're not playing in prime time. Like, it's a difference in playing in the cold in Pittsburgh than playing the cold in Buffalo.
Of course. And it's a difference of who's throwing you the football.
Yes.
Which is,
you're not going to land. The chances of you landing with another Hall of Fame quarterback are going to be
sure, but the chances of him landing, though, with a team that has a quarterback that is playing at the level of Ben Roethlisberger.
This is not about a quarterback. This is about getting a new lease on life, trying to get a new contract, and I'm tired of the quarterback calling me out. Let's a power struggle.
And
the quarterback's not going anywhere. So AB said, my choice is to leave.
And listen, some places are worse. Indy be pretty damn good. Indy's got $100 million they can pay him. They've got an excellent quarterback. T.Y. Hilton is a fine number one, but would be a killer number two receiver. And all of a sudden, you're on the more age, the same age trajectory as
you. Yeah, and you also run the risk of ruining your locker room, too. So make sure you bake that in there with them stats.
Every team has to – they've got to – I don't think you can trade for him if you don't think we have either – at least a coach or quarterback, preferably both, that has a very firm handle on things. You can't put him in a situation, I feel like, in Jacksonville where you don't know if you have either and run over the locker room. I agree with you there.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, could Luke Walton have coached his last game with the Lakers? That's ahead on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, FS1 NBA analyst Sarah Kustoff joins us now. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, you guys. Great to see you. What's happening?
Great to have you.
Thank you, CeCe.
Welcome Jenna. Back home.
Welcome back home, Air 5. What's up? Must watch basketball last night. If you're going to shake her hand, Sixers.
I'm going to air it. I mean, she got way more cool. We can
third
shake.
Quarter.
We can dap.
Close game all night. Jason Tatum throwing down the dunk. Teammates love it. What's not to love? Fourth quarter now. Sixers down two. Joel Embiid gets the three-point play the old-fashioned way. They go up one. Less than a minute left. Embiid can't get the call.
Gets hacked.
Oh, he's mad. Marcus Smart splitting the defense here for the dunk. And the Celtics, in all their recent dysfunction, win this one, 112-109. Here's head coach Brad Stevens on his team turning things around.
Good teams have clunkers, but good teams respond to those with the right effort and approach. I just thought the whole night we played the right way, and we tried to stay within ourselves, and we didn't get too high or too low, and we fought. And, you know, that's what you have to do to have a chance to win.
At the end of the day, it comes down to guarding our own men. So that's what we have to do. You know, these guys, they take advantage of, you know, when we do help and move the ball pretty well. So we just need to do a better job of guarding our own men, starting with me. And do right for his suck.
Oh,
it's going to be a fine.
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah. Get your wallet out, Joel.
All right, Sarah, let's talk about the win. What did the win without Kyrie tell you about Boston last night?
Boston still has all the pieces. And I think we saw that in how they played yesterday. And using the word dysfunction, we've seen this Boston team trying to find themselves. I think them figuring out roles, a lot of it has had to do with these players looking at where their record is at. And I believe they expected to be tops in the Eastern Conference, one of the top two teams in the Eastern Conference. So a lot of their dysfunction, I believe, comes from the fact that they're not winning at the same rate that they anticipate. You look at what they were able to do against this Philadelphia team. There's a couple of stats that always pop up to me when Boston is playing well. And obviously everything they do predicated on their defense. But when they can make three-pointers, it changes the complexion of how they play. They move the basketball. I think they ended up with 24 assists, 25, 26, only six turnovers. So they took care of the basketball. They were able to make shots. They moved the ball well. And so a player like Gordon Hayward, he's going to be a major X factor if he continues to get better. He showed flashes late December, early January. Now it's becoming a little bit more consistent. And I like the fact that a guy like Marcus Morris, who called out this team, called out the group, he came out of the gates and he was playing really well. But I think for them, it's still about figuring out how do they play this way with Kyrie Irving? Because they're definitely a better team with him on the floor, but how do they keep moving the ball the same way? How do guys continue to maximize their production in some of the limited minutes they may get?
Right, it's one of those kind of things that, yes, we know we're more talented when Kyrie, when we get off the bus, but we don't play better basketball when he's out of the lineup. So in theory, yes, we look like we're better. The two things I thought really stood out after your comments were the lack of turnovers, which were without Kyrie. You can't look at them absent of one another, all right? They function how they function, how the offense was run, seemed like it ran at a higher level without Kyrie and Gordon Hayward. I think that with this, because, man, we have seen some awful moments from an elite NBA player. I'm talking about outside of the injury. Like, he has had times where he lost his confidence, where he was turning down shots, where his inability to explode up and down the court the way he used to, lack of confidence in going to the hole to get fouled. So him playing last night in the role that they carved out for him, I thought was very, very special besides how the offense ran. Because if Gordon Hayward is going to be my sixth, seventh, eighth best player, I'm going to have a hell of a basketball team. Now, how can I get him to the playoffs and get his confidence? I believe that Boston, like a lot of teams in certain situations, it's not, you can't figure it out. They just have an edge over a certain team. A lot like Green Bay always has with Aaron Rodgers over your Chicago Bears. So this right here, I'm not going to try to read too much into it, but I like what I saw offensively. Lack of turnovers, moving the ball, and Gordon Hayward was special last night. Can we build on that?
All right, so there's a lot here. First on the Kyrie stuff. The Kyrie with and without for the Celtics is very confusing because the metrics are with him on the court, they outscore people by 9 points per 100 possession. With him off, it's 1.5. They are way better with him than without him. But they're also 8-2 now in the 10 games he's missed. So somehow, even though they are not, but the metrics for the Celtics have been off all year. They have the fourth best net rating in all of basketball to go along with the eighth or ninth best record in basketball. So this team analytically has been much better than what its record actually is, which is, by the way, the opposite of what the trend had been. The trend had been they had been in the previous years overachieving their analytics because of late game coaching, because they were winning close games, because they were the best team in the league or one of the best in three in one possession game. So that's first point. Second point on Hayward. He was 6 of 7 of 3 last night. If Gordon Hayward had been doing it the way Gordon Hayward did it in Utah, slashing, getting to the bucket, slash and kick, I would be a little more encouraged than a night where he's just on fire from outside. But he needs the confidence builders. Right. He hit the biggest shot of the night. Marcus Morris drove, yeah, kicked
it to him.
One thing
as a professional, man, when you've had great success and you either go through an injury or you go through some type of drought where you have lost your confidence, it's just like filling up a cup. You got all them, you got them bad memories in there. Man, you got to flush them things out. And last night, what he did, it's huge in a game with the type of intensity that it had. For him to get them good memories, he was stumbling up and down the court. We were laughing and joking, old Gordon Hayward. Mm-hmm. So we should be pointing out
for sure,
with the same intensity when he played a great game when they needed him. We don't need him to be the slasher. We got enough of those. If he could sit behind the three-point line
and knock down shots.
That's where I think. Because, yeah, his slashing ability, his ability to put it on the deck, was always a huge part of his game. But I think for this Celtics team, that's less of what you need. You just need him to be a threat there around the three-point line, and I think the rest of it will come, him getting out in transition.
And one other note quickly before we move on to the Sixers, which I know you want to do. A shout-out to Al Horford. Who was excellent.
Yes.
He forced it. Listen, that's a veteran foul at the end. You know, listen, Embiid's either going to make the shot or you're going to foul him. And maybe they don't make the call.
He shouldn't even been around, too, because he got a bad call early in the game. He ended up getting a technical. Mm-hmm. He complained enough. He should have gotten thrown out of the game.
Sure. He was as angry as I've seen him.
And it's because of his overall character.
Yeah.
Yes, he normally doesn't act that way. He's a great leader. They allowed him to get himself back together, stay in the game, and he was a key component.
And listen, Horford was great on both ends. He rarely has these 20-plus point games. I talked to him 2 days ago about whether or not he thinks he's underrated because he's never a big scorer. And he said he thinks smart people that know basketball appreciate what he does. Last night, everyone should have appreciated what he did.
Yeah, on your show.
I spoke to him one day ago, and he said he really liked the conversation that he had 2 days ago with you. And you probably spoke to him this morning. So let's talk about the Sixers now. Sixers are 1-7 against the Celtics, the Bucks, and the Raptors. Why do they have such a hard time with the top of the East?
I will first say that I am not sold that they are better than the Bucks and Raptors. I am very high on Milwaukee in particular, but Toronto as well. And then additionally, I think you look at last night and the new pieces they have, I think this is going to take some time.
Oh, no
I think
doubt.
They're going to need the 20-plus games here throughout the rest of the regular season to figure out how they play together, how they try and work in some of these new pieces. And you look at a team against Boston. I mean, you bring up the key fact. Al Horford is excellent against Joel Embiid.
Yes.
Embiid ends up, and he had a good line last night, but in his possessions matching up against Horford, Horford gives him trouble, and
yeah,
he makes him settle for a lot of extended range shots, a lot of three-point shots, and not doing as much work on the inside. And so I do. I think at some point for the 76ers team, it's a matchup thing, but I think that gets in your head. And that's something that you start to think about, not just in the regular season, but then how that fares out in the postseason.
Horford can guard Embiid without fouling him. Embiid, he's second in the league in free throw attempts, second league in free throw makes behind only Harden, who's first every single year. Embiid last night only took 4 free throws, took 8 threes. Every team that plays the Sixers will say, if Joel Embiid takes double the threes of free throws, we are in a good spot. The concern for the Sixers, though, is exactly what you pointed out, Jenna. They have been great at home, except for against these best teams. They have dominated. They've been one of the best teams in basketball against mediocre or bad teams. But against the teams, you're in the second round of the playoffs, you are playing either Milwaukee, Toronto, or Boston. And you're 1-7 against them. You went 1-4 in the playoffs last year against Boston. Now, three of those games came down in the last possession, but you lost all three of those last possession games. I do think they are more talented, obviously, now than they were last year. But they got to get over that hump, and they got to figure out one guy off their bench. One guy off their bench that can be a consistent.
I think we have to give them more time, like we did Cleveland last year. This is a team that's gone through two big transitions. All right, got Jimmy Butler early. Now went through another big trade right on the trade deadline. So let's give them these last 20 games, and then we can decide that later on, because it's just not fair. Kawhi, he's got a teammate coming from San Antonio. They make the adjustment with Milwaukee. They didn't add a whole bunch of new players. Right. Added a new system with the best player in the world, Giannis, right now, playing at his best. So let's wait on Philadelphia. Let's give them a chance over the next 6 weeks to determine how good they are in the East.
But you want to avoid that 5 seed.
Absolutely.
That's a scary spot.
All right, Sarah, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Coming up, are the Lakers due for a coaching change? That's next on First Things First. Saturday on Fox, Big Ten contenders square off as number 24 Maryland battles 6th-ranked Michigan. Then Xavier taking on Providence. It all tips off Saturday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Let's go, Providence.
All right.
Let's do this. That's
we'll get
our guy.
To the Lakers in just a minute, but first, LSU, Kentucky. Marlon Taylor catches the alley-oop, throws it down. This guy's head was literally above the rim.
Oh, he got up now. Every bucket mattered in this game. This is a great win for LSU at Rupp.
Little backdoor cut against the zone.
How about the oop? The little scoop.
Oh, no, nice little cavalier with it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Controversy at the end of this game.
Celtics Sixers, Jason Tatum spinning off Joel Embiid and dunking it over Ben Simmons.
Oh, Daniel Theis likes that. He ain't done that since ever.
Tatum has a little extra every time he plays Philly, right, Nick?
Yeah, man.
A little extra sauce.
Philly traded up from 3-1. Tatum thought he should have gone number one. They take Markelle Fultz. He says, okay, I got you.
Lakers Hawks. LeBron threading the needle. Nice pass to Brandon Ingram.
LeBron was amazing last night as far as his passing. The only thing amazing about the Lakers, there were several times, too. He could have had close to 20
assists. Should have been a 20-assist game.
Yes.
First play of the game.
20 assists, 20 free throws. Because LeBron starts selling for them jump shots, too. So
first play of the game, he gets Kuzma a layup. How many times in transition did he pitch it ahead for a layup and a guy gagged it?
But it wasn't all good news for LeBron. No. Forgettable night for the Lakers, except that we remember it quite well. They lost to one of the worst teams in basketball in the Atlanta Hawks. As a result, they hit the All-Star break below 500 and currently out of the playoff picture. Questions swirling now about head coach Luke Walton and his job security. Here is Walton on the Lakers' mindset entering the break.
Disappointing loss for us, but it's time for us to get away and reflect a little bit about where we are as a group. And I think this first part of the season, we've gone through a lot of adversity as a group, we're probably not where we want to be, but we're still close enough. So we got a challenge ahead of us coming back after All-Star, and we got some work to do. But I think we have a group that's up for that challenge, and we'll look forward to attacking that when we get back after it.
All right, Nick, what do you think? Should the Lakers stick with Luke Walton through the rest of the season?
No, I think they should fire him during the All-Star break.
During this current All-Star break that starts tomorrow?
Yeah.
That's the one?
Yeah, that's a fireable loss last night. There's nothing to lose by firing him. Does someone make the case for me Luke Walton's a good NBA coach? I'd love to hear it. That doesn't involve when Steve Kerr was out, the Warriors were 39-4. I'd love to hear the case that to why you've got to stick with Luke Walton, who last night was guessing. What's the rotation going to be? I don't know. Mike Muscala, who played, we traded for him, he gets 14 minutes. He's not going to play at all. Reggie Bullock, he's going to start because LeBron's going to play point. No, actually, LeBron's going to play center. No, the Hawks' big men are in foul trouble. Let's not play a big the whole time. LeBron's going to play 44 minutes, but he's going to come out mid-third quarter and then play the entirety of the fourth quarter. Someone make the case. What is it, the 26 wins his first year with the Lakers or the 35 wins last year with the Lakers that is supposed to make me believe, well, you got to stick through Luke Walton through these growing pains? I don't see it. I just want the case to be made as to why, when a team clearly needs a jolt, and if they're going to be a championship team at some point, it's almost assuredly going to be with a coach different than Luke Walton, why you wouldn't make the move right now when you have Brian Shaw sitting on the bench as the interim guy.
Oh, so you think Brian Shaw would be the jolt? That, like, that would give them the jolt?
I think that if you are going to have to go on a push in the final 25 games of the year, a seismic shift in a team can be beneficial. And I do not think you're going to lose anything schematically or player development by not having Luke Walton there anymore.
Right. Now, as far as the thing that's fireable to me has been the lack of young players developing. So I'm not a person that likes to overreact. The reason why I watched the game last night was because I thought they could lose. They weren't playing well as a team. But that, to me, is not the reason why you fire him. The reason why you fire him is because I don't think my young players are responding to the coach. In the time that they spend off the court, they're not developing the way I would want them to develop. Now, the benefit of being in the NBA, we have seen season changes early in the season, mid-season changes, and the team go on to improve. Typically, in the NFL, you don't see that. NBA, you can see that. Is Brian Shaw the force multiplier? I don't know to that one. I don't know. There have been a lot of times where Brian Shaw has been mentioned as, man, he should be the next head coach. I don't know about Brian Shaw. The jury's still out on me. Is he going to be just a quality assistant coach in the NBA, or can he make that next step? So for me, I just don't fire someone just to fire them. I do believe that the Lakers, they should play out these last 25 games, and then they get a pick of any coach in that they want, compared to settling just for Brian Shaw. That part right there, it worries me just a little bit.
I want to make it very clear. I wouldn't say Brian Shaw is the coach for the Lakers long term. I just mean you're not going to hire a new head coach mid-season. So you take a guy from the bench in Brian Shaw, make him the interim coach, and then you do a full coaching search that Brian Shaw could apply for this offseason. I want to make that part clear.
I'm going to ask you the unpopular question. How much of this is that LeBron doesn't gel with Luke Walton? How much of this is the young players aren't responding, aren't growing, aren't turning into the team they thought that they would?
The problem is the Lakers, if LeBron James is not on the court, fall apart entirely. This year, with LeBron on the court, they outscore their opponents by 2.5 points per 100 possessions. With him off the court, it's -5. That's a 7.5-point swing. When he was out, they lost a home game to the Knicks, who are not trying to win. They lost a home game to the Cavs, who are not trying to win. In that Philly game, they're down 4 with 3 minutes left in the third quarter. They take LeBron and Kuz and Ingram out simultaneously. I don't know why. You'd have to ask the coach. And by the time any of them come back in the game 5 minutes later, it's a 20-point game. Listen, I am not a basketball PhD, but I'd like to think I got my master's. And there are certain basic things that you know when you are limited talent-wise you have to do to keep your offense flowing, to give your team a shot. And going through big stretches of games where Lance Stephenson is your featured offensive player, that's indefensible.
Well, what about the signing this offseason? The front office signed those players.
Sure.
So, I mean, what is Luke supposed to do? I mean, they signed Lance Stephenson and Rondo. So if LeBron, if he comes out of the game with Lonzo being hurt, who's going to be a playmaker for you? So is that Luke Walton's fault?
I think you got it. I don't think they should play 1 minute where either Kuz, Ingram, or LeBron are not on the court, because those are at least three guys that can all create their own offense and have shown the ability, if a defense collapses on them, kick it out. I also think there is no circumstance where LeBron James should play 44 minutes on February 12th in Atlanta. Right. Like, you can't allow a non-overtime game. Those are – I don't get on TV and like to fire guys. You guys, this is the third time I've done it. The other two got fired later that day. Like, it is when I think it is on the board and I think it is deserved. And I just don't, I would like someone to make the case for me as to what does Luke Walton do. Forget, is he a force multiplier? Convince me he's not a force divider. Convince me he's not a negative asset as a head coach. I'd like to be convinced.
All right, got to take a break. We have to. My second pen ran out of ink. There's a lot of note-taking that's going on sitting next to me.
It goes with the heat in your hand. There's ink in this one. You can have that one, Jim.
Okay, and we're back. Let me have that one. Oh, try it. I just want to see.
Let me resurrect it.
You could try to make their... Who should make a move for AB next on First Things First? Talk some football.
Shut up, people.
Back here, first things first, Super Bowl champ Chris Canty is here. What's up,
That's
Chris?
What happened. The lights didn't go out. Canty was just in front of the thing.
Oh, you're
really?
Right.
You going to blame it on me?
So now
I'm an eclipse for the camera?
Absolutely. True story.
All right, Canty, it appears the end has come for Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh.
Good job, everybody.
He has reportedly requested a trade from the Steelers, this stemming from the fallout of skipping practice the final week of the year and from his rocky relationship with Ben Roethlisberger. Brown tweeted yesterday, "Thank you, Steeler Nation, for a big 9 years. Time to move on and forward." A couple other players weighed in as well. Jalen Ramsey tweeting at Jaguars, shrug emoji. And Cardinals corner Patrick Peterson said, "Yo, Antonio Brown, hit my line." All right, Canty, what do you think? Which team should trade for Antonio Brown?
Before I answer that question, Jenna, I just want to say that this reflects poorly on everybody involved in this situation. All right, not just A.B. and Ben Roethlisberger and the rift, which seems to be the genesis of A.B. wanting to get a trade, but also the people in the Steelers organization, the hierarchy, right? And specifically Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert, their general manager, because they should never let the relationship with their best player and the most productive wide receiver in the National Football League this decade devolve to the point where it's irreparable. Like, it should have never gotten here.
And I think everyone agrees with that, and I think we're going to spend a bunch more time on that later on. But is there a specific team in your mind or a few teams that you say AB would put them over the top, or that their first call this morning should be to Pittsburgh?
Okay, well, here's what I'll say. First of all, there are going to be a few motivating factors, right? The need and then cap space to be able to facilitate this kind of trade, but also being able to have the draft capital. So you look around the landscape of the NFL, who has multiple high picks, multiple picks in the first couple of rounds of the draft? Now, I know you might want to point to some AFC teams. Nick, I know you mentioned the Colts earlier in this. They have a ton of draft picks and a lot of cap space. But if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm not looking to help out somebody that I'm probably going to have to face in the playoffs. So I'm thinking about the NFC teams. And of those teams, you look at the Green Bay Packers. They got multiple first-round picks. They got that pick from the Saints. I think it's 30th overall.
Yep.
You look at the Philadelphia Eagles. They got three picks in the first 57 this year. So I know that they could be in a situation that they're looking to add another playmaker for Carson Wentz.
I was going to say, the one thing the Eagles don't have that you said is the other part of it is they have negative cap space.
But they're going to clean that up. Between now and the start of free agency, that'll get cleaned up. They'll probably trade Nick Foles. They'll probably let some guys go. They're going to create some cap room. And you have to watch those teams that are going to position themselves the next few weeks to do that. Now, I think there is an artificial deadline with this because the Steelers owe AB a $2.5 million roster bonus on March 17th. So you'd think that if they're going to trade him this offseason, that would probably get resolved before they have to pay that roster bonus
out. Just take a quick step back and refresh for the audience just what needs to happen financially. What kind of hit the Steelers would take by trading him before his contract is up?
Listen, the Steelers' cap hit for Antonio Brown this year is almost identical if he's on the team or if he's not on the team, assuming he's traded by March 17th. Now, if the difference for them is obviously if he's on the team, he has a cap hit each of the next 2 years as well. But you get the production. If he's not on the team, you get zero production there. So you free up no cap space, but you don't cost yourself any cap space is the easiest way to put it by trading Antonio Brown. Now, I think one of the things the Steelers have working in their favor, as far as making him an attractive trade piece, is his contract is very friendly. 3 years, $12 million per season in an era where mid-range number one wide receivers get $16 million per year, and the top of the market is $18, $19 million per year. He's the most productive.
I mean, that's one way to look at it. I don't look at it that way.
Because you think he's going to demand a new deal the moment he gets to where he's going.
I think.
Well, no,
Why would he go anywhere else for not wanting new contract demands?
Well, I know he's going to want a new deal, but I'm just what I was leading up to and what I was going to ask you is, do you think whomever trades for him is trading for him anticipating that they will give him a new deal? Because with 3 years left, and once he gets traded, he will lose a lot of leverage. Like, it's very tough to be traded to a place and immediately say, you have to give me a new deal or what? What is the recourse that Antonio has as the player?
Sometimes I just like to use common sense, all right? He's very comfortable in Pittsburgh. All his guaranteed money is gone. Drew Rosenhaus represents him, I still think, because AB's been firing people. Mm-hmm. A couple people that I know work with AB been fired in the last 6 months because he's making a change as far as his career. But it doesn't make sense. You have to sign him to a contract extension. And given the intel coming out, there's all kind of good articles, all right? If you want to read some good stuff on AB, just go online and read about what he has done to the Pittsburgh locker room. Mm-hmm. If you think if you don't give him a new contract, that's the guy you're getting. So you got to give him a new contract. And if you don't think there's going to be some new money included in that, then you're looking at something totally different than the way I look at it.
Yeah, I think it has to be a wink and nod agreement when you make the decision to trade for AB in this kind of circumstance, right? Because Pittsburgh is one of the most stable organizations in the National Football League, but it hasn't looked like that the last couple of years, and that's because you have Antonio Brown and the fractured relationship between he and Ben Roethlisberger, but also with what's going on with Le'Veon Bell and wanting to get paid on a long-term deal and them consistently franchise-tagging him. So I think that there are a lot of moving parts within the organization, but in terms of what AB is going to want, he wants to go somewhere where he can be a star and he can be on display and not be challenged by anybody else. That's not what the Pittsburgh Steelers offered him. That's going to be a part of what he's looking for. But also, to CeCe's point, there's going to have to be some more monetary compensation in that. Absolutely.
All right, so let's talk about what teams have the draft capital, are willing to do that, and have the system in the situation where he would actually make a good fit.
Listen, I disagree with Canty as far as I don't think the Steelers, if it's even, sure, ship him to the NFC. If you have two offers, you look at as the same. But I think the Steelers have to take the best available offer. If you've got, for example, the Colts offering you the 26th pick and Green Bay's offering you the 30th pick, I'd rather deal with maybe I got to play him in the playoffs and have the four better spots in the draft.
I'm like, with Canty.
Why would you want to do that?
You're
trying to compete for a championship with Ben Roethlisberger. You're probably going to have to give him a contract extension.
Yeah.
Why would you think to trade him to the Colts, a team that probably is going to be in the conversation?
And there's probably going to be more than one team. If that was their only offer, I could understand that. But I'm not helping Andrew Luck. And that AFC thing, I think that will play a part in there, because also there are going to be a number of people trying to get involved in this. So it's not going to be, I believe, just one or two teams.
To answer your question, why would I do that? Mm-hmm. I would want to take the best offer possible, because the Steelers, guess what the Steelers got to worry about? Mm. Not who they're going to play in the AFC championship game, winning their division, getting back to the playoffs, what type of team they're going to have without Le'Veon Bell and without Antonio Brown. My best way to get back into the tournament, to give myself the best chance to get Super Bowl
So what if Cleveland
seven,
makes you the best offer? What you going
to
do then?
And I trade them to Cleveland and I deal with them twice a year.
Yeah, that's crazy.
We've seen guys trade within the division. We've seen teams.
Yeah, who were those players though?
Well, I mean, we saw the New England Patriots trade Drew Bledsoe a year after making him the highest paid player in the league to the Buffalo Bills. We have seen, I mean, that's just one example. We saw the Philadelphia Eagles trade Donovan McNabb to Washington within the division. Those are quarterbacks. Like, we certainly have seen it done. Some teams have philosophy.
No player in his prime like AB.
No.
We have never seen anyone like AB be traded to a rival and or a divisional team in recent
years. But isn't it fair to say we haven't seen a player of AB's caliber aside from Khalil Mack traded, period, in recent
I just believe it's our
anybody?
It's our responsibility. I wouldn't trade him to Cleveland. Cleveland would be a great spot for him, and I wouldn't trade him to Indianapolis. I believe there's other places. I would trade him to other places besides those, because the AFC thing is real. Eventually, I'm going to have to go through them, and I'm not making it easier for AB either. I'm not sending them somewhere. I'm like Greg Popovich. I'm going to do what's best for the organization.
100%.
So wherever you end up, you requested the trade, all right? So I'm going to send you whatever's best for the organization. I believe it's out of the AFC.
I would still say Buffalo. If he's disgruntled, he's disgruntled.
Jenna's just
you want to
you started your career in Buffalo.
I did, and I love Buffalo.
Clearly you love Buffalo. Send him to Buffalo. Stick it to him. I love Buffalo. Good people, Buffalo.
Coming up, could Kyler Murray end up going number one overall next on First Things First? Chippewa Street? It's a great street up there in Buffalo.
Then why do you want to send him there, Jenna?
I just think he wouldn't be happy there, so because of the quarterback situation. That's it. It's a lovely place to live. Back here, First Things First, we're going viral. Monday night, Bradley Beal committed one of the most, check it out, egregious travels of the NBA season. I think he took 9 steps. The official NBA referee account tweeted out, the offensive player gathers with his right foot on the ground. He then takes 2 legal steps before losing control of the ball. After regaining possession, a player is allowed to regain his pivot foot and pass or shoot prior to that foot returning to the ground. Thus, this is legal.
They said it was legal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you disregard this first 3 steps, watch this. One, see, because they didn't say he picked up his dribble. So, right. Oh, that was just a move. Uh-huh. That was like a hesitation.
Listen. And then, obviously, this is not legal. If it were legal, you could just hot potato the ball up the court.
Right.
You just inbound the ball and tap it to yourself and run to the basket.
That's funny. That,
now, referees last night came back and said, listen, that was not legal. That tweet was wrong. I'm going to start a side business, see? A consult.
Well, you should because you got your master's in basketball. You
absolutely told right. Absolutely. I said, not a PhD. I think you got a PhD in pass catching. I said, I think I have a master's
come on. If
you
got a master's in hold something, on. Come on. I'm hold, out of damn school.
Hold, okay. I said a PhD means you're out of school. Not a no, point. No. Let me finish with the side businesses for a moment, for a second, please,
Chris
Carter.
We've been working on this all morning.
Hold on a second, see.
Let him get it out.
I'm going to open a clinic of people who all of a sudden open prominent Twitter accounts, how to deal with criticism. Because what happened was NBA refs, whoever runs that account, saw Complex Sports was laughing at them, and they were like, no, I'm going to respond. We're actually right. Hey, man, if you're going to be out there in the public eye on Twitter, people are going to send you mean, nasty, awful things. You just got to let it.
That's what I say. Don't worry about what anyone says about you on Twitter. Don't be affected by it. Don't be offended by it. Don't be hurt by it. Let it just roll off your shoulder. Okay, moving on. Time for stories
Jenna,
to start
your morning.
Jenna,
the last thing you said last segment was a lie about Buffalo. The first thing this segment was a lie. Let's see
epic
if we can get the rest
comeback.
Of the way with just truth.
Epic, I have feelings, you know. Epic comeback for number two ranked
lie
team
number
last
three.
Night. They were down 23 to Louisville, less than 10 minutes to go. Guess what? They won this game. See, how big was this for Zion and company?
Oh, it was good for the young players. That's what I love to see them struggle because it's going to help them in the NCAA tournament. This was a game typically that we see one of the top five teams. They go somewhere in January, February, and they end up losing. Louisville's a tough place to play. They're trying to change that program back around, but these young players hanging in there. And I like what Coach K told them when they were down 23, I don't coach losers. And they went out there, these young kids, and they played some great basketball, especially the last 10 minutes.
Zion, 27-12, despite foul trouble. Cam Reddish was extraordinary. He was the biggest reason they had the comeback. R.J. Barrett had a rough night. Even though Louisville's in transition, that is a tough place to play. And 23 points in college basketball, that's like 35 in the NBA. That is as good of a comeback as you will see in college basketball all year long.
All right, let's move on to the Lakers now. They lost to the Atlanta Hawks last night. LeBron and company under 500 announced it at the 10th seed in the West heading into the All-Star break. What do you think, Chris? Was last night rock bottom for the Lakers?
Oh, no. No, they got levels they can go under.
You think it's still coming?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, do you think they out the woods
but up
just
to,
because of break?
Hold on. Up to this point, is it rock bottom? Is this the lowest?
Well, it's just like after the earthquake. You say, what was worse, the earthquake or the aftershock?
Okay.
Okay, because there could be some other things that come out of this. They can't sustain another injury. What if LeBron gets nicked the rest of the way? They could also fire the coach. Like, I don't know if Brian Shaw is the answer. I got a lot of respect for B. Shaw as a basketball and what he knows about basketball, but is he the right mix for them? So, man, yeah, it can get worse.
Oh, I agree it can get worse, but the way I thought the question was, up to this point, is this the worst
it's
been?
It's a matter of interpretation.
Exactly. The difference of philosophy, as some would say. Up to this point, this is rock bottom for the Lakers this year.
Finally, with Kyler Murray entering the NFL draft, some people thinking he could reunite with his former quarterback coach Cliff Kingsbury. While he was still coaching in college, Kingsbury said he would take Murray first overall if it were up to him. Well, as the head coach of the Cardinals, he now has the top pick at his disposal. Huh. But yesterday, Kingsbury reiterated Josh Rosen is their quarterback of the future.
Yeah, no doubt. Our feelings towards Josh haven't waned or changed or anything. I get we have the first pick, and so there's going to be a million scenarios over the next 3 months that are going to come up. But no, Josh is our guy, and you know, Kyler's a tremendous player, and I said that was being very complimentary before we played an opponent. And I understand the soundbite, but like I said, there'll be a ton of scenarios that come up before we get to the draft.
Yeah, there'll be a ton of scenarios and whatnot because you made that comment.
But you got to hold on. But keep in mind, real quick. They were about to play him. And if Texas Tech was about to play Ohio State, you know what I bet he would have said about Dwayne Haskins? Man, if I had the number one pick of the NFL draft, I'd take him. I don't think it's fair because it's the head coach complimenting the opposing team before the game.
But it's funny how it all
works. Oh, of course. Now he is the head coach of the team with the number one pick, of course.
So what do you think? CeCe, let's start with you. Should the Cardinals pick Kyler Murray first overall, even though they already have Josh Rosen?
Absolutely not. No. No, Josh Rosen's going to be a good quarterback if they protect him. I mean, they can't allow him to get sacked the way he did last year. But, you know, Steve Keim, who I know there is a general manager there, I don't believe he would have taken Kyler Murray. So regardless of what the coach said before he got there, no, they can't use that pick on him because that would have meant that they were wrong on Josh Rosen. And you got to get out there ahead of this because those quarterbacks are sensitive. You think wide receivers are divas. You better put out a press release. You better have your head coach say, yes, hey, man, we don't want this guy. Because you need to because I saw Josh Rosen at the end of the season. Man, he needs a friend. He needs a compliment. He needs some confidence because the confidence he had at UCLA, he lost that in his rookie season. Now, that is very typical of rookies in the NFL, but can he regain that confidence? Can they put an offense around him? Will they protect him? So I think the organization did the right thing. Kyler Murray shouldn't be the first pick in the draft of the Arizona Cardinals because they have a quarterback and they have plenty of other needs.
And listen, Josh Rosen had about as poor of a rookie season as one can have. Probably the poorest rookie season for a starting quarterback we'd seen since Jared Goff. And Jared Goff, by the way, then immediately turned things around when they got a left tackle, when they all of a sudden started protecting
him,
got him some weapons.
But there's still a lot of people got questions about Jared Goff.
Oh, 100%. And people have, even I was very high on Josh Rosen coming out of college. I'm not going to throw him out after 1 year. But you can't say you're reassured by what you saw after 1 year. But this is what C said, totally correct. This is what Cliff Kingsbury has to say, even if they're considering it. Even if Steve Keim came to him and was like, you know what, I watched the tape, I saw the same thing you did. The way you have to find out Josh Rosen's not going to be the quarterback of the team anymore is the day they trade him. Like, as long as he's on the roster, you have to be committed to him. The best case for Arizona is not drafting Kyler Murray number one, is that there is a team that desperately wants to draft Kyler Murray number one, and you can trade down, yeah, because Arizona needs everything, see? Like, I mean, what's the spot on the Arizona Cardinals other than running back that you're like, you know what, I think they're set at? I feel like they need offensive linemen. Defensive linemen would help, too. Mm-hmm. They've got a great running back, a great corner, and an aging Hall of Fame wide receiver. They got David Johnson, Patrick Peterson, Larry Fitzgerald, everything else. So they need it. One, Nicky Bosa would be great for them. What they could really use is a couple first-rounders and a future first-rounder. So they should talk up Kyler Murray or behind the scenes, hoping someone wants to trade up for him. But they can't take him or else Kyler Murray going to have the same. He's going to be playing for the same team Josh Rosen played for last year, a team that spent their first-round pick on a quarterback, didn't supplement the rest of the roster enough, and has the same type of struggles.
All right, let's get back to basketball now. And a must-watch game last night, Sixers and Celtics. So many storylines here. No Kyrie in this one, still nursing the knee. Third quarter, close game all night. Jason Tatum throwing down the dunk. His teammates love it. What's not to love? To the fourth now, Sixers down two. Joel Embiid gets the three-point play the old-fashioned way. They go up one. 30 seconds to go, Sixers down two. Again, oh, Embiid not happy with that call. Here we go. Marcus Smart splitting the defense for the dunk, and the Boston Celtics and all their dysfunction win this one 112-109. Here is Brad Stevens on his team turning it around.
Good teams have clunkers, but good teams respond to those with the right effort and approach. I just thought the whole night we played the right way, and we tried to stay within ourselves, and we didn't get too high or too low, and we fought. And, you know, that's what you have to do to have a chance to win.
At the end of the day, it comes down to guarding our own man. So that's what we have to do. You know, these guys that take advantage of, you know, when we do help and move the ball pretty well. So we just need to do a better job of guarding our own man, starting with me. And do right for his suck.
In reference to the
missed call,
non-call. Yep. All right, Nick, what did the win tell you for Boston? Who did it, by the way, without Kyrie Irving?
This is a great win for them. They are coming off two stomach punch losses. You're up 18 against a Laker team that clearly can't find itself. Mm-hmm. You lose that game at home. You're up 28 against a Clipper team that is trying to figure out who they are without Tobias Harris. Yeah, the Clippers outscore you by 39 points in the final 28 minutes of that game. You lose that game at home. You then go on the road against a team you very well might play in the postseason, mm-hmm, a team that has been brilliant at home all year. Only the Denver Nuggets went into last night, mm-hmm, with a better home record than Philly. And you beat them without your best player. And the Celtics, even though all the on-court, off-court splits tell you they are better with Kyrie, and they are better with Kyrie, they're now 8-2 without him.
So they have been able to find a way to win, which I know is important to you, C, because you don't think Kyrie's the type of player that is, you can just say, oh, he's not going to be injured again the rest of the year. You just mark him down in stone to play every game once he comes back from this injury. So all of this is really good for Boston. They got one more game before the break, but had they lost this game, they were going to go into the break, I feel, questioning themselves a bit. Now I feel like they can say, you know, the Clippers game is inexcusable. But Rondo, if he just misses that, we've then won 12 of 13. We're feeling good. Nobody's, or 12 of 14. We're not overreacting the Clipper game. So really important good win for Boston, and very happy for Gordon Hayward.
Gordon Hayward was special in this game, shooting a three, hit six of seven from the three-point line. But I just like his energy. I like the sets that they ran for him. Very, very similar to the people doing the telecast talked about how the sets were very similar to some of the sets that he had in Utah. In Utah, he was far more athletic, dribbled the ball a lot more as far as getting the action started on the offensive end. They haven't been able to do that because he's not as athletic, but they had some good sets for him. He got some good looks, knocked down some shots after missing that first three-pointer that he went to. So for me, when you have a player that's been as talented as he has, go through a horrific injury, where it was one incident. It wasn't he had a season and a half, two seasons where he couldn't play basketball. No, he had one bad injury that took away his confidence and took away some of his explosive ability. So for me, it's important to get good memories inside of his head so he sees himself doing great things. So when you go to the video room, you don't see yourself stumbling up and down the court, not having the type of explosion that we have seen in the first half of the season that he is he's shown us that, no, he's not the same player. But if he can play like this, coming off the bench, because he wasn't a starter, right, and I think that adjustment, more starting, him coming off the bench, if he can be their seventh, eighth best player, man, the Celtics are going to be a dangerous basketball team.
And Joel Embiid can complain about the refs, and I love Joel. And listen, it was a missed call at the end. But Joel Embiid, what he's got to figure out more so than the refs, because that's going to happen, is why Al Horford gives him so much trouble. Al Horford gave him trouble in the playoffs last year, in the regular season last year, throughout this regular season. When you have a game where Embiid takes twice as many threes as free throws, that's a testament to the guy who's been guarding.
Yeah, I think his game plan against Al Horford is the wrong one, because it's either all or nothing. He is either in the restricted area trying to go through Al Horford, muscling him, or he's at the 25 feet and at the three-point line. You can't do that to a player like Al Horford. Now, Brad Stevens does a great job of, they're not going to double-team Joel Embiid. So Joel has to be able to figure out, how can I get to that mid-range point? Let me start my offense there, and I can take a J here, or I can try to get into the paint, into the restricted area. I think that would help him. But being 25 feet away from the bucket, he's not necessarily the threat, because every team in the NBA wants him to shoot threes compared to backing them down low.
LeBron shouldn't be taking 10 threes in a game. Joel shouldn't be taking 8 threes in a game. Period, point blank. And that's it, both those things happened last night.
Big win for the Celtics. No Kyrie.
Okay.
Coming up, could Luke Walton have coached his last game with the Lakers? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Sarah Kustoff. LeBron and the Lakers trying to sneak in a win before the All-Star break. Doable against the lowly Hawks. Fourth quarter now, Lakers down 8. LeBron and 1. He had 28, part of a triple-double for him. Under 4 to play now. Lakers within 4, but this doesn't help. Atlanta's Taurean Prince for 3. Hawks go up 7. Next possession, Trae Young getting by LeBron, finished the layup and 1. Hawks go on to win this game 117-113. So the Lakers limp into the All-Star break under 500. LeBron, as we mentioned, triple-double. Not nearly enough, though. Here he is on the loss.
We didn't have consistent play from all facets of the game. You know, offensively and defensively, you know, we jacked up a lot of our coverages to start the game. Then in the third quarter, we jacked up a lot of our coverages again. So it was always playing uphill like we've been doing as of late. So we're going to be a lot better.
How close are you to the point where you start worrying about the playoffs? Is that getting close?
Until you either make it or don't make it, that's when you worry about it.
All right, Sarah, you watched this game last night. What went wrong for the Lakers in this one?
I think those highlights show just about every basket that was scored. in the fourth quarter.
Oh, my God.
It was brutal. I mean, and you can go through the list of a handful of things that went wrong, but one of the biggest issues in the fourth quarter in closing out the game, they could not make a basket. And
Hawks left the door open.
100%.
Hawks didn't score a point from 6.5 minutes left in the fourth to 1:45 left in the fourth. It's almost five full minutes.
And the Lakers had opportunities. They had layups. They had some transition looks and just couldn't get things to go. But I think overall the biggest issue to me was their lack of any ability to stop someone, and especially in that first half. And we saw it the other night against
Boston, Philadelphia or Indiana.
You can go through the list, but Philadelphia, they gave up over 70 points in that first half. Against Atlanta, I think they gave up 65. And so a lot of that is communication. It's figuring out rotations. It's getting used to playing with one another. But more than anything, they're not a team that can take another opponent lightly. And that's what I feel like. You didn't see that same type of mental engagement, attention to detail that you would need in
Atlanta. Especially knowing you're not going to play until the following Thursday. You got 10 days off. Like, they should have been all in. Well, based on the minutes LeBron played, you thought they were all in.
Well, and listen, Luke Walton and LeBron had clearly two different game plans. LeBron's game plan was, I am going to distribute early. He had 14 assists through three quarters. And saves, because it is less taxing to be the distributor than the slasher. I'm going to distribute and take jump shots early. And then I would imagine the plan was, if needed late, I will take over. But late, he had nothing left in the tank, because here's when LeBron went out of this basketball game. Played the whole first quarter. Then was out for 105 seconds to start the second quarter, but then the house started to get more on fire, so you had to put him back in. Does not come out of the game again until 4.5 minutes left in the third. Comes back in with 3:05 left in the third. That was in the second quarter, pardon me, and then the third, same thing. 3 minutes left and 1:22 left. Like, he not only did he play over 43 minutes, he didn't get any of the, I'm going to take out with 1 minute left in a quarter, so you have that break, the quarter break, the beginning of the next quarter break, where you can steal 6-7 minutes of rest in 2 minutes of game time. We looked it up, Dusty and I, during the break. In non-overtime games this year, LeBron and Harden, now Harden's done it a bunch, are the only star players to play this type of minutes. You don't do this in the NBA, even if it's a week and a half before the All-Star break, because you're certainly not supposed to have to do it before against the Hawks in Atlanta.
This is a team that looks like they're just learning to play together. They're trying to figure out who plays how much, who plays what position. This is the same team that basically started the season. They've had an entire half, if not more, to play together with the same coach, same cast of characters. Why does it seem like they cannot get on the same page?
Well, they have. It seemed on paper they've made a couple changes, but it's been fragmented. Because they've had a number play. Rondo's been out twice. Lonzo's been out twice. LeBron, those 18 games, something we have never seen. So it's hard to develop continuity, and they're just not that good. We can't say that, man, we had the All-Star break. Well, what kind of team the Lakers got? They're not that good. They don't have the margin of error. They've played basketball in the last 3 weeks. Like, we thought they'd be a top 10 defensive team. Not in the last 3 weeks, they're not. So I don't think that they have an identity. That was my biggest problem with the fourth quarter. So they try to get up and down, all right? LeBron's a little too old for that, but I can understand them trying to play that style. But in half-court offense, what are they trying to do? I don't know. So to me, they have an identity crisis, and Nick had mentioned it before. The trade deadline's gone. What else can you change? So I believe that the trade deadline, they'll be looking at trying to change the coach, and that being Luke Walton.
Well, and to your point, the identity crisis, that's a real thing. And so we've seen this team play at different tempos and different pace throughout the course of the season, trying to figure out how exactly do we get the most out of LeBron? Where is he going to be playing at? Is he going to be facilitating throughout the course of the game? Do we put him at the elbows? Do we play him inside? I mean, he spent, I think, most of the second quarter playing in that five spot.
Playing center.
Yeah, and so they're trying to figure out combinations of who he works well with. And I think more than anything, too, with this team, when they can't score, they definitely don't get stops. And so you're allowing a team like Atlanta to put up that amount of points against you, and the Lakers can't score with them, they can't stay with them, and all of a sudden you saw in the fourth quarter it was an issue where they just looked absolutely deflated every time up the floor. So even when they got a good look, got a good shot, they weren't able to convert.
When you're in the midst of a 4-plus minute drought and your opponent is as well, and it's still a 9-point game or a 7-point game, you know what
You know what that's a good time for? For your coach to call timeout and say, here's our best play. Let's get a bucket, put a little pressure on them, cut it to four, cut it to five. The only thing left to do is to, today, Rob Pelinka, Magic Johnson, and Jeannie Buss, if she's involved at this level, she owns the team, but she said it's up to those guys, ask themselves this question. What is the downside to firing Luke Walton? Is it that the young players aren't going to develop? Because I saw D'Angelo Russell get better once he left. Julius Randle continued to get better once he left. The only young player that you can say is, wow, that was, look at his developments, Kyle Kuzma.
Yes.
And maybe he was just underdrafted.
And he was the other player. He was the only player out of those players that wasn't a lottery pick. The right. Lottery picks have not developed. So you do make a good point there. Kustak will tell you, though, in those late parts of the game, you can't get a bucket. Yeah, I want the coach to say something, but also there's some responsibility on you as a player. You know what, man? We ain't getting the ball to go in the hole. Let's get to the free throw line. Let's stop shooting jump shots.
Sure.
All right? And with them being a poor free throw shooting team, I don't see the urgency late in the game to get to the line, because up and down that lineup, outside of Pope, man, they're horrible free throw shooters.
Well, and that matters. Because that gets in your head. So if I'm someone that's shooting 50, 60, 70% from the line, do I want to be at the line at the end of the game and crunch time to win it? But I think it's even smaller details than that. The Lakers didn't foul. They had a chance to make it. It was still a one-possession game, and they let 10 seconds, 7 seconds go off at the very end. And then they fouled, and it's like, that matters. So then all of a sudden you're putting Atlanta at the line with 4 seconds left when you should have had an opportunity to make it a two-possession game.
Right, at 100.
And it's small
all
things.
All of it matters.
It's small things.
And all of it is things that I don't – C's right. They are not overly talented. And LeBron, coming back from the injury, has played fine. I mean, it's tough to say 28, 11, and 16 wasn't good enough, but last night it wasn't good enough. And he clearly ran out of gas late. But there's coaching matters. And I am yet to hear the argument as to what Luke Walton does that would be missed if he were gone. Is it the rotations? Because he's throwing darts right now. There is no rhyme or reason why there's one rotation one night. Last night, if there was ever a night to play more minutes for JaVale McGee, it's when the other team's big men are instantly in foul trouble and you have a real size advantage. That's the night he's like, hey, let's try out the LeBron at five experiment. Is it that he's going to work with the young guys? No, I don't see that. Is it that he and LeBron have this close bond? I don't see that. Is it that, well, he's the guy we want long term because he's a proven championship level coach? No. So if you're going to give yourself a chance to have a jolt late in the year, sometimes somebody's got to be a casualty. And Luke Walton, to me, later today when they wake up on the West Coast, they're having that conversation. Magic was at that game last night, by the way, in Atlanta. So, I mean, he saw that firsthand.
Quickly, do they make the playoffs?
I still think they do.
All right. Hopefully the seventh seed, if you...
Well, yeah, but the seventh seed might be gone.
The seventh seed might be gone, but I still think they have a shot. I think they'll make a push.
Sarah, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, you guys.
Much appreciated. Take a break. Talk some football. Can the Steelers contend without Antonio Brown? That's next on First Things First. Saturday on Fox, Big Ten contenders square off as number 24 Maryland battles 6th-ranked Michigan. Then Xavier battles Providence. It all tips off Saturday at 11:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app.
Michigan fans, go to that first game. They're giving out season football tickets at the basketball game.
I don't know that that's true.
One, Christopher Canty. Chris, despite having 3 years left on his deal with the Steelers, Antonio Brown has reportedly requested a trade. This stemming from the fallout of skipping practice the final week of the season and subsequently being benched for the final game. Quick history here. Steelers missed the playoffs this season. Brown doubled down on his desire to leave yesterday, tweeting, "Thank you, Steeler Nation, for a big 9 years. Time to move on and forward." Chris, how did we come to this, where we are today with Antonio Brown?
Well, that tweet wasn't passive-aggressive at all, was it?
Not great.
Not even a little bit. No, you know what? I really don't understand how it got to this point, Jenna, and there's a lot of blame to go around. But, I mean, Antonio Brown has the responsibility to his teammates to be a professional. So what he did in Week 17 when they were trying to fight for their playoff lives, that's completely unprofessional. And all I'm saying is you cannot put your teammates in that kind of situation where nobody knows what they can expect of you when we got to go out there in that game. They had to win that game to even have a chance to qualify for the postseason. The fact that you bailed on them, that doesn't reflect well on you. So I think that that's probably at the heart of where we're at right now in terms of the organization having to make a decision about Antonio Brown. Because, listen, if Art Rooney II had it his way, Antonio Brown would be a Pittsburgh Steeler for life. But guess what? Based on what has happened now and the fractured relationship between AB and not only Ben Roethlisberger but his teammates, I think that the organization is put in a tough spot where they have to get rid of the distraction that has been Antonio Brown.
And the fractured relationship between AB and his head coach, Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin, who's protected him, some would say has enabled him, but certainly given, I would argue that Antonio Brown's been very lucky, if you will, at how Mike Tomlin's treated him, allowed, given him special dispensation. Now, maybe it's working against him at this point, but at any point in their relationship, I would think Antonio Brown would say, man, I love Coach. He lets me do this. He lets me do that. He understands I'm going to produce on Sunday. And for him to then disrespect him to the degree he did, to not only no show, no call, but put Mike Tomlin in a position where he's got to do a press conference saying, I can't get a hold of the guy. He won't return my calls or texts. That's embarrassing. And it undercuts Mike Tomlin at one of the only times in his Pittsburgh tenure when he's really being questioned about his job security, about his future. So I totally understand why the Steelers would feel we almost have to move on, but the almost got removed over the last few weeks with the tweets, with the Instagrams, where Antonio has made it clear, I am not interested in a reconciliation, even if you, the Pittsburgh Steelers, are.
Hashtag do what you want to do. Because the question was, how did it get like this? And the reason why it got like this, because Mike Tomlin was not the disciplinarian that he is in the press conference after practices and after games. Because then Mike Tomlin is tough. We see a lot of coaches that are tough like that. They got the mic. Man, I'm tough, man. This is my team. But the truth of the matter is guys are doing what they want to do. And if you want to look, there have been stories coming out of Pittsburgh for a long, long time. For me, in being involved in this business, a few things that I must know. I must always know about the character and the whereabouts of all the wide receivers in the league because they're going to be in the news. If I can't explain that position, what good am I on TV? So, AB, this is not new. I've worked with AB. I know people that work with AB. Yes, he is a tremendous worker. Yes, he is the hardest worker in the building when he gets there because he has been habitually late for years and been able to get away with it. So, Mike Tomlin enabling the kid, just like parents. Well, which one of my parents got the soft spot? Which one's not going to discipline me because that's the one I'm going to deal with? And that's what's happened to him, and he's become a star doing that. So now, what concessions will they make? Forget about the Facebook video a couple years ago in the locker room. Like, he's put this organization in some bad spots from a PR standpoint. So it's time for him to go. Forget about him requesting a trade. I would have been trading his butt anyway when he didn't show up to work the last week of the season when we're trying to get into the playoffs. So him trying to feel like he's in control, man, if I was Pittsburgh, I'm not trying to send him somewhere favorable. I'm going to send him where I can get the best deal and potentially if I can happen to send a
stick
message
to him
in that,
bit.
I'm getting ready to do it because I know the Pittsburgh Steelers. I know some of their legendary players. I know players that have played there in Pittsburgh. And there's a reason why Antonio is top 10 in NFL merchandising sold last year, the only wide receiver. It's not just because he's good. It's because the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Pittsburgh Steeler Nation, they support their players and have been doing that for a long time. The organization have supported their players, have camouflaged, because they got some edgy players through the years.
Yeah.
The greatest other great players all got a little edge to them coming out of Pittsburgh. So they've protected these players, and they protected AB until it became where we couldn't protect him anymore.
And one of the things the organization has also done throughout the years is they've had continuity more so than any other NFL franchise. If you look at it, their general manager has been there forever. Their head coach is going to be there for a really long time. I know people have said Mike Tomlin is on the hot seat. Mike Tomlin hasn't had a losing season since he took over as the head coach for the Steelers, and he's got a Super Bowl on his resume, and it's a franchise that's had three head coaches in the last 50 years. So they've empowered the people at the top of the organization. organization. And CC, to your point, I think this presents an opportunity for the Steelers to take back some control from the players that they've seen, that we've seen the last couple of years. They can set a precedent, a new standard, because they've got to be able to turn the page from the distractions that players have brought up, whether it's Le'Veon Bell or Antonio Brown.
So let's talk about turning the page. For the last however many years, it's always been, okay, coming into the season, they've got the three B's. They're going to be there in the end in some form, one way or another. They're going to be in the playoffs, and they are always in contention. The last 2 years, you've had the Steelers at the very end. Now looking ahead, what does this team look like? I mean, can you still look at the Steelers team and say, yeah, no doubt, they'll be there at the end?
Listen, I think they have the two most important pieces, which is an elite coach and elite quarterback. But the rest of it's very different. The division is very different. We will see what Baltimore looks like in year two of Lamar Jackson, and we will see what Cleveland looks like in year two of Baker Mayfield and year one of Freddie Kitchens. You also have a team who we know defensively does not have the identity it had a few years ago that now is going to have to win some games defensively, because I think Juju is a good receiver. I think we are also going to see that Juju is going to see what life is like when you are the team's primary option as opposed to a team's secondary option as far as what the other team, the defense, is trying to do to you. And who's I liked James Conner. I like his story. And I think he was a good player last year. We saw, though, especially as the year wore on, he's not Le'Veon Bell. And so, Big Ben, do we think he's going to get better? Is he going to maintain, or is he going to drop off? They go into next year, to me, assuming they trade Antonio Brown, with more questions than they've had at any point in the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, here's what I'll say to that. The fact that they're willing to absorb a $21 million cap charge and move on from AB, that tells you that the organization believes it's going to be addition by subtraction, because by getting rid of all the distractions, the team can focus on the task at hand, which is trying to win football games and compete for a championship. So, yeah, it's not a good thing when your star wide receiver isn't returning the phone calls from the owner, but ultimately I think that the Steelers organization will move past that and focus on trying to take back control in that AFC.
The Steelers for the last 10 years have done a great job, and even beyond that, as far as getting wide receivers and not using high draft capital doing that and developing them where they became starters. One, two, three. They got 4 or 5 guys up and down NFL roster. Been like, wow, that guy, Mike Wallace. Oh, man, he started over here. Man, my man in Denver. Oh, he started, he started over here. So they have done that. What I like the Pittsburgh Steelers do to change the whole organization back to when they used to win. I know Ben wants to throw the ball, but I want to bring some punch back to the Pittsburgh Steelers. They got a couple good rushers in Watt, in Dupree. Bud Dupree. Yep. I would put some more people around them, and I'm getting ready. I don't care what they say about the rules. I'm getting ready to start going after the quarterback. They got two young quarterbacks, one in Baker, one in Lamar in Baltimore. Listen, I'm getting ready to put maximum pressure on them. I'm getting ready to lean on James Conner, because the best unit on the Pittsburgh Steelers is their offensive line. We don't talk about them, so I know through Ben and through that offensive line, I'm like baseball, I'm strong up the middle. I believe James Conner over the next 3 years will be a better pro than Juju Schuster, so I'm leaning on him as a running back. I know Ben's going to be good, but I'm going to bring some bite back to that defense, and that's how I bring Pittsburgh Steelers back to relevance, because for me, I've been covering this league a long time. And in every decade, the Pittsburgh Steelers are in the conversation. So it's not getting ready to change with A.B. leaving and L. Bell leaving. Mm-hmm. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've been one of the most stable franchises that we've seen in the NFL. But this is a watershed moment for them to take back control of the football team.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. And catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.